Ama geldim de bana mesela bir an önce de mesela ben de koştu. Onun yeri tam bir yana tazmayı şükür edeyim ben. Bu kan kırıltı ve açılan tonluğun ben gayet iyi bilim. Yaklıyıp tamamen değişik olduğunu tanıdım. Nuvam 15'li Bidaya Krishna Prasaya Gurdulay Shrimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Sadaswati Devi Gauravani Vicharanini Vishesha Sambhavi Pascha Chadesh Karane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaiti Gadadhar Shivasan Gaura Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just before I came down, when I understood what was about to take place this evening, I thought of a verse from and commentary from Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, and short. I thought I would read it first because I think it captures to some degree the mood of His Grace I Am the Lord. It's Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhukanda, chapter 9, text 146. Shari Prahar Ratri Nidra Nahi Krishna Name Savarachi Harivali Dirgala Advani. He passed the entire night without sleep while loudly chanting the names of Krishna and Hari. Commentary. By loudly chanting the names of Krishna throughout the night, Sridhar disturbed the village's peaceful sleep. As a result of the pure devotee's current preaching of the holy names, the godless literators of this world become so disturbed by hearing the holy names vibrated by the mouths of those pure devotees of the Lord, that being unable to express their inconvenience, they engage in various forms of harassment. In order to deceive people and obtain material objects with the desire to gratify their senses, some of them earn their livelihood by reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, glorifying the topics of the Lord, or performing kirtan with expert musical arrangement. In this way, they try to show that they are equal to the pure devotees. Intelligent persons, however, can easily detect their duplicity in the form of deceitfulness and mundane endeavors. The purpose of a devotee's kirtan is to feelingly address Krishna for the benefit of themselves and the godless human society, while the purpose of the cheetah's kirtan is to gratify their own senses on the pretext of chanting the holy names, giving lectures, reciting, and singing sweetly. Therefore, there is a difference of heaven and hell between the activities of the servants of the Supreme Lord and those of the lusty sense enjoyers. I thought of the verse. I didn't remember exactly where it was, but somehow Krishna had me find it in about 30 seconds, so I figured there was a reason for it. So I thought I should read it. And as I said, when thinking of Ayanda Prabhu, I thought of this verse of commentary. Verse speaking about Kulavecha Shidha, an associate of Lord Chaitanya, who was oblivious to external formalities, oblivious to harsh, sometimes even harsh criticism of his unwillingness to pursue material gains, which were of a great interest for many of the materialists during the time of Kola Nitya Sridhara. They could not understand his simplicity, his detachment from worldly pursuits and economic gain, his detachment from personal comfort, and his attachment to continuous chanting of the holy names of the Lord as he did throughout the night. The foolish residents who would observe his behavior would sometimes think that because Kola Nitya Sridhara lived in such simplicity and externally appearing to be in poverty, that his loud chanting during the night was mistaken by them as cries of hunger. Mm-hmm. And they would speak in this way, "Why are you crying out all night long in hunger for some food? Simply, why don't you worship Goddess Chandi as we do, and she will give you all opulence and comforts." But Kola Nitya Sridhara preferred to live in a simple hut and with a roof that was filled with holes, and every time it would rain, the water would leak into his hut. He had no possessions whatsoever. He was known as Kola Nitya Sridhara, the banana leaf seller. And selling banana leaves in Bengal is not a very lucrative business. Banana trees were everywhere, a lot of competition. But still, he was quite satisfied to sell banana leaf cups and plates to earn his livelihood and give 50% of his earnings for the worship of Goddess Ganga. And even Lord Chaitanya himself, who was a contemporary of Kola Nitya Sridhara, would sometimes come and try to provoke Kola Nitya Sridhara by his mischievous behavior. And even alert him, "Kola Nitya, why are you living like this? I can see that your dhoti is tied in 10 places. It's filled with holes. You don't have to live like this." But Kola Nitya Sridhara was fixed in his chanting and his conviction that there was nothing else necessary. Shraddha Shadde Vishwas Kahi Sudhudanishtaya Krishna Bhakti Kale Savakama Kittahaya. This Shraddha means firm, confident faith that simply by chanting Hare Krishna, engaging in devotional service, all necessities can actually be fulfilled, and automatically all subsidiary activities are fulfilled as well. But if one performs all subsidiary activities, they always remain incomplete unless it is accompanied with this Shraddha, our firm, confident faith and the glories of the holy name of the Lord in devotional service. So this verse is about Kola Nitya Sridhara. And the commentary, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, elaborates and helps us to understand the difference between, or as Ayendra Prabhu is just speaking, Shudhana, or the pure holy name of the Lord, Shuddha Sankirtan, and that which is mixed with other fruitive desires, which is impure, which cannot actually give prema, or pure love of God. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in this commentary to this verse shows us the distinction that the Shuddha Bhaktas, the devotees who actually are empowered. As Ayanji Prabhu quoted the verse, Krishna Shakti Vidinahitai Prabhartana, Kali Kalir Nama Krishna Nama Sankirtana. That the fundamental religious principle in the age of Kali is the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Krishna Shakti Vidinahitai Prabhartana. Unless one is empowered with this Krishna Shakti, one cannot distribute the pure holy name of the Lord. Therefore, the goal of chanting, which is ultimately Krishna Prema, is inaccessible. Therefore, it's very important that we understand the distinctions between those who are professional performers, those who are interested in simply adulation, adoration, profit, some material gain. They also can chant the holy name of the Lord, but there's no comparison. Their chanting is cannot be compared to those who are feelingly chanting for Krishna's pleasure. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says it here in the commentary that the pure devotee's chanting is done with feeling, with purpose. His aim, his objective, his exclusive objective is to glorify the Lord. As Prabhupada himself explains in many commentaries, in one place in particular I'm thinking about, he states that it is this pure chanting which is done for Krishna's pleasure which is attractive. Which he says, he was speaking about the six Goswamis, can attract two types of men, those who are honest and even those who are rogues. They said they can be attracted to this pure chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So Prabhupada was appealing to his followers, to his disciples, to chant for Krishna's pleasure, to dance for Krishna's pleasure. And he said that one who chants and dances for Krishna's pleasure, then what good will your knowledge of Vedanta do? One who actually chants with love for Krishna, he's automatically understood the goal of Vedanta. These words are about my Bhagavad Gita. They're not empty. I personally felt in his presence the association of somebody who understood what these differences were. And therefore, he could do as he did, sit in one place and chant the holy name of the Lord, and it would be heard all over the world. And he was very exemplary in that respect. And it's certainly to have somebody who has deep faith and conviction in the holy name as he did. I first knew him, I'd say, as a Manhattan, Brooklyn. So maybe, I can't remember what year. Early 1980s, remember, possibly. Although he joined in the 70s. But I remember him from Brooklyn when he was, at that time, he was very keen on inundating Manhattan with Harinam. And he would go out in Harinam, but he was thinking there must be a better way to inundate Manhattan with the holy name. So I remember going to, I believe it was Brooklyn. It was definitely after 55th Street. So I left 55th Street, 1979. So it must have been around 1981, 1982. He started in
1982. Huh? 1982, they moved to Brooklyn.
They moved to Brooklyn. When he built the flatbed truck, we used to go to New York. Devotees was, you know, because he spent a lot of time building this flatbed truck, single-handedly. It was You know, we tried to get other people to assist him. He did. He got people to assist him, but he built this very beautiful flatbed truck. It was a huge altar, and a huge sort of like a singer song. And it would open up on all sides. There would be a platform and a stage. And he could drive it anywhere in Manhattan, pull over on the side of the road, open everything up in just a short time, and do Harina with loudspeakers. Somebody told him to leave. the most mystifying thing about it is oftentimes he would stay in places all day, and people would come from all over to be attracted by his kirtan. And he did this for quite some time, quite a few years, I remember. And as typical, people would challenge, you know, why are you doing this, you know. But he was, as he once said, I believe, he said he only heard one word from Srila Prabhupada directly to him. He was telling the story, I think it was when he was in Washington. Prabhupada came to Washington, and Anindya Prabhu was, I think he took a mandanga, and he was leading kirtan. And Prabhupada was there. I think Prabhupada was in Washington there in 1975, it was. And Anindya Prabhu was in front of Prabhupada, leading, and Prabhupada turned to him and said, "John." And then just kept on walking. And Anindya Prabhu said that was the only words that Prabhupada ever spoke to me personally, but it was enough. That's all he needed. Just that one word from Prabhupada, who showed, who expressed his pleasure for kirtan, he just took that as on his head as his order for life. And it was that conviction which carried him in his flatbed truck throughout Manhattan for many years, broadcasting the holy names. And it was that conviction that brought him to Vrindavan. I believe it was 1986. He relocated to Vrindavan and stayed there since then. And became an icon, practically, for our Krishna consciousness movement as a person who was fixed in chanting as he would. Prabhupada's desire was that the 24-hour, the kirtan, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord would go on 24 hours a day in Vrindavan. And Anindya Prabhu took that as his life's mission, to see that kirtan vibrated 24 hours a day in Krishna Balaram Mandir. And if there was nobody else to chant, he was there chanting. And he did that for many years. And because of his determination and conviction, gradually devotees began to gather and to participate and to assist him. And then, as we said, his chanting was vibrated throughout the whole world, and people would come simply to associate with him. And although he would spend so much time chanting, it was also very obvious to anybody who spoke to Anindya Prabhu that it was not simply sentiment. He had understood the conclusions of scripture, and he could speak for long hours relentlessly on the importance of the holy name and the actual goal of chanting the holy name of the Lord, which is to enter into Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service, and to become, as he described in his video, to live in, at home in Vrindavan. He considered Vrindavan his home, not simply because it was some place, you know, in India that was a sacred place, but he actually took shelter in Vrindavan and understood the meaning of living in Vrindavan and never leaving Vrindavan. That was his aspiration, that was his conviction, and although it appears that Krishna untimely took him from our association, it is clear to those who knew him and associated with him that Andhra Prabhu never left Vrindavan. He may have left our vision, and therefore we lament, as Prabhupada says, when Vaishnava departs, it's like the disappearance of the sun on the horizon. Sun may disappear in the western horizon, but it's only disappearing to our vision. It's still in the sky. So although he may have disappeared from our vision, he is certainly still residing in his home in Vrindavan and engaged in the service which is most attractive to his heart. I had an experience, and I'll end because I know other devotees wish to speak. I'm sorry, maybe I spoke too long. It's just a short. My last exchange with the Andhra Prabhu was in 2009 in Vrindavan. I was there for 2 weeks, 2 weeks during Gaur Purnima. And after 1 week in Vrindavan, I went on Parikram in Vrindavan, and when I returned, I couldn't walk. And something happened to my back, slips and discs. Doctors were there trying to get me to revive me. And I literally just, I couldn't get out of bed. And Andhra Prabhu, the next, I think it was the day before Gaur Purnima, 1 or 2 days before Gaur Purnima, I was sitting and talking with my godmother, Murijan Prabhu, where I was staying nearby to Krishna Balaram Mandir. And Andhra Prabhu had called the day before and left a message that please tell the Ranjana Swami that Gaur Purnima is coming, the devotees are gathered all over, please come and lead kirtan in the Krishna Balaram temple for all the Vaishnavas. And when I heard this, here I was literally bedridden. I couldn't get out of bed, and I was thinking, how am I ever going to deal with Andhra if he ever comes and asks me to leave? And sure enough, the next day, I was sitting in Orjan, knock knock. Andhra Prabhu comes in. Maharaj, how are you? His effervescent self, as he always is like bubbling. Office gets down on the basis. This is, looks at me and says, so you're coming to the temple? And I don't know how to say no to you. You're a difficult person to say no, but. And they said, and so he said, oh, you have to come. Bibi Govinda Swami is coming, Shri Ram Swami is coming. Please come, you must come, you must come, you must come. And I said, well, you know, I would like to come, but, you know, I can't walk. That's okay. I think he said, we'll carry you or something like that. So I knew better than to try to. I felt something was coming from my heart, and I felt I really had to say it. And I didn't. I wasn't using it as a tactic to divert the conversation, but it was rising up that I felt I had to tell Andrew. I said, Andrew, I just want to take this opportunity. I haven't seen you for a few years. I folded my hands. I just want to thank you for what you're doing. It's what you're chanting. You're sitting there in Vrindavan chanting the holy names, and it's going throughout the whole world, and it's transforming this planet. Please, I know that Prabhupada is pleased by your service, and please just accept my words of gratitude for the service that you're doing. And I said that, and he seemed completely, he looked at me and like a, it was mystical. He looked like a little child. Little child. So innocent. And so unassuming, unaffected by my words of glorification. I could see it was just like, you know, oh, thank you. It's like, you know, usually if somebody hears some glorification, they, you know, immediately, you know, oh. It wasn't there. It just wasn't there. But it did, it did, he stopped pushing me. He just said, Maharaj, he said, if you come, come, I will push you. And we talked for a little while. He stopped pushing and we spoke for a little while. Boy, John, I couldn't ignore myself. But I actually, what I learned from that, how important it is, I learned something else from that, because obviously I didn't know. It was the last time I saw Andrew. How important it is to tell somebody how you feel about them, because you never know if you'll see them again. And I felt so gratified, although I was lamenting, as we described before, the lamentation when I heard of his departure. But I also felt simultaneously so gratified that my last encounter with him was a genuine expression of my appreciation for his service to Prabhupada and for his attachment to the Holy Name. So, there's more I could say, but I think we spoke long enough. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Did the other two devotees want to speak? If so, let's go. Because if we can't, for the Pushpanchali, if the curtain opens, we're going to have to wait until after the curtain closes, okay? So keep that in mind, everybody. Sorry for my appearance. I kind of looked like a sloth today. I didn't expect to speak, but I thank you, Maharaj, for speaking on Andhra Prabhu. Whenever I would tell Andhra Prabhu I was from Boston, the first thing he would say was, Narayana Swami, you need to come here. He'd really like your kirtans. I was on the 24-hour kirtan party at Krishna Balaram Mandir from 2004 to 2007, which by far the 3 best years of my entire life. I first met Andhra Prabhu in 2003, and I was just in awe of him. I got to know him for about 3 weeks when I was there. And when I came back here, I begged Ram Roy Prabhu, who was Andhra Prabhu's, one of his closest friends, to ask him if I could be on the kirtan party. I thought it would be something that would be kind of hard, because it didn't seem like he accepted just anybody. And sure enough, when I spoke to him on the phone, he just asked me what my passport number was. And he accepted it right away. He had many different sides to him. And one of the sides that you don't get to see too much when he gives class, because he's very intense when he gives class, is his sweet side. I got to know that really well over the years. We spent a lot of time together. One of the first services we did together was in the summer of 2005. If you've ever been to the Krishna Balaram Mandir, the Gurukul bathroom that faces the street at that time was in really, really rough shape. It was falling apart, and he really couldn't stand it. So one day, he knocked on my door, and he asked me if I wanted to help him put it back together. So I said, okay, I'll go. And he promised me that it would only take a weekend. It ended up taking 4 months. But we started, first we stripped the paint off the walls. I mean, I basically did whatever he asked me to do. He did all the work. He replaced all the doors in there, repainted the walls, the entire shell. It's the best bathroom in all of India, I'll tell you that. One day, when we were replacing the doors, he mentioned that he didn't want to buy new hinges because he felt the hinges for the door were still in good shape. So as we were carrying the old door through the bathroom, he dropped his side of it, and the hinge fell off. And he said, well, we'll get it later. And so when we went back in, we couldn't find it anywhere. So we assumed that it fell into the toilet. And I figured, well, I knew who was a senior devotee, here I go. I gotta find that thing. And before I had the chance, he said, well, it was my fault, I'll do it. And he reached in there to find it. And I was in awe that this senior Prabhupada disciple just went ahead and did that because he thought it was his fault. And sure enough, when I turned around, I saw the hinge on the floor and I told Prabhu, it's not in there. And he just laughed about it and he said, oh well. That was his service attitude. He would do anything. One time I told him I wanted to go to a class instead of cleaning the bathroom. And he said to me, yeah, well, I used to read Bhagavad Gita. Now I clean the bathroom. And I just did it with him for the rest of the summer because I didn't want to be heavy out again. The way he would talk about Krishna and Krishna's associates, and even with his friends, it wasn't like a person that he heard of. It was someone he knew, someone that he associated with personally. I'm not sure if anyone ever met Dadu Prabhu, who was the mailman at Krishna Balaram in Deer Prakriti since forever. He passed away recently, but he was very close to the Indra Prabhu. And one time I was walking back into the temple courtyard and I saw the two of them arguing back and forth, and I didn't know what it was about, and Indra sounded like he was defending someone, and Dadu sounded like he was defending someone, and he said to Indra Prabhu, he said, well, he'll beat you up. And I just kind of stood there, and then when me and Indra Prabhu walked upstairs, I said, what was he talking about? Who is he talking about? And Indra Prabhu looked at me, he's talking about Balaram, saying he's going to beat me up because I want to aid Radharani and Krishna's in eternal service. He was so upset about it, the way they were talking, that I just let him go on and on. His anger went on for about an hour because he was upset that Dadu told him Balaram was going to beat him up. His service was so personal. And in the summer of 2006, that was a really, really, really hot summer, and the Kirtan party was basically a skeleton crew. It was about 3 or 4 devotees. And the night shift had to be done 10 to 1 by one Russian devotee doing it by himself. And then I had the 1 to 4 shift by myself. And it started to get really, really, really hot. And so I ended up saying, oh, well, I'll come down and help you sometimes. So he'd come down, and in Vrindavan during the summer, you get this prickly heat rash because it's so hot. A lot of people get it, and he had it really, really bad. And I had it really, really bad too. So when the electricity went out, it was just really, really brutal. And one time, about 2:30 in the morning, he was leaving and I was playing with him, and we were covered in prickly heat. And when he stopped the tune he was playing, he looked at me and smiled, and I thought he was going to say something, you know, really, really profound. And he just looked at me and he laughed and he said, we are the two ugliest guys in Vrindavan. And then went on with the next tune. So we were really close to the point where we became friends. We made fun of each other. We got mad at each other. And I was just a 22-year-old kid. he was an extremely advanced disciple of Srila Prabhupada, but he still treated me like his friend. And I don't know why he did it. I was just fortunate, I guess. One time, he would do it with many other devotees too. One time in his room, one big fan of his, a devotee from Russia who really appreciated him a lot, asked him, referring to me, "Oh, is this your disciple?" And we both started laughing, and he looked at me and said, "No, he's my friend." And that's the way he treated a lot of people. He just wasn't really interested in prestige. He really liked being friends with people and associating with them on the same level. It was very uncomfortable for him to be seen on a higher platform. He was a real far-out personality. One of the first services he did for Srila Prabhupada when he joined, he had really long hair down to the bottom of his back. And he would come around the temple, and different people told him that he should cut his hair, but he didn't want to. And as he started to get more serious, one time he cut all his hair off and left a whopper of a sika, like all the way down to the middle of his back. But he brought all his hair to the temple, and he wanted to give it to Prabhupada. So he gave it to the temple president. He said, "This is for Srila Prabhupada." And I guess the temple president took it. I don't know what went beyond that story, but this is a real personal one, that he once had a dream about that. He would repeat it quite often, and he would repeat it in class, that one time he was sitting with Prabhupada, and he said to Prabhupada, or he told Prabhupada the story about his Sankirtan band, and Prabhupada said, "Okay." And then he told Prabhupada how he restarted the 24-hour kirtan, and Prabhupada said, "Okay." And I literally began to cry in the dream, because it was as if he couldn't impress Srila Prabhupada. And he said, "Prabhupada, have I done anything for you?" And Prabhupada said back to him in the dream, "If you haven't done anything for me, at least you cut off all that long hair for me." And he would mention that dream quite often. One of my fondest, it shows how much he appreciated people taking up the chanting of the holy names, was one night, me, Durjai Krishna Prabhu, and Balaram Prabhu were doing night shift kirtan. And I knew Prabhu, when he would do his puja, sometimes he wouldn't be able to start it till really late, and it would take him a long time, because time almost didn't apply to him, the way he would talk with people all the time. People would come to his room for hours, and it's somehow like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just weren't applicable to him. He always got everything done, and it didn't make sense. But he would come down every now and then, because he didn't have time to go out to the market to get things for his puja. So he would borrow it and put a donation in the temple room donation box. He'd borrow it from the pujari room. And one night, he came downstairs about 2:45 in the morning. He would have to do his whole puja before the next Brahma Muhurta, so he had about 5 minutes to eat it. And when he came down that night, we were doing one tune from Chintamani Nam, and we had our backs to the entrance to the temple room, and when he heard us doing the kirtan, he came a little bit closer. We saw his shadow, and the way he smelled like his room, that side floor, you could smell from a mile away. You knew where he was. When he came up behind us, we turned around, and he was actually crying. And he said, "I just want the three of you to know, I'm so proud of you." And that was one of the most special moments in the three of our lives, to see him so happy that we were doing what he wanted us to do. As still remember how I felt at that moment. It was just, it was so touching.
When?
8:30.
Somebody else has to speak to, right?
I'll just tell about that story in relationship to his duties that he would tell all the time. He was always asked, how come you have so many shalagrams? And he would say, well, they just come to me. I don't go looking for them. They just come here. And he would tell a story that one time Narada Muni asked Radharani, why is it that when you're separated from Krishna, your love is so much more intense that when you're with him, it doesn't make any sense? And Radharani replied to Narada Muni, she said, because when Krishna is with me, I see one Krishna, he's right there. But when he's not with me, I see him everywhere and everything. And that was like this mood to see Krishna everywhere in everything. It's hard to believe that he's not even here anymore, because if you knocked on his door, he was there. He knew he was there. He was going to come down every night for kirtan.